Who put the bop in the bop shoe wop shoe wop? It's Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and upcoming forthwith, in an extra credible show, we'll speak to Wild Birds and Peace Drums, producers of fine Swedish noise. We'll have music from Discovery, Jay-Z and Magnolia Electric Company. We'll cast a winsome ear over the work of Harry Nilsson in a feature with no name, and we'll have your sweet face back too. But first, get your plaid on and cock your rifle. It's time to meet Deer Hunter. Was Agoraphobia by Deer Hunter, our first guest this week. From Atlanta, Georgia, and amongst the contenders for the title of most indie band in the world, we reviewed a track from Deer Hunter's Microcastle album on the pod last year and got an unprecedented response on the blog. Joining me here is Rosie Swash. Them Deer Hunters, they have some devoted fans, do they not?
They do indeed. I'm sure they inspire passion in many people. They also inspire criticism, which Bradford Cox is known to go on and take on single-handedly across the blogs, which we talk about a bit in the interview. Their album Microcastle, which came out last year, kind of pushed them into the next bracket. In the same way, I think, you know, Animal Collective, been around for about 10 years, and then suddenly people are actually going, actually, this band are really good. And so, unfortunately, we couldn't meet up with Bradford when Deer Hunter were in, like, London for like one night, because it just doesn't work like that in Bradford's world.
Oh, he just flies in, flies out.
Exactly. But we did manage to speak to him when he was on tour in Japan. I have to say that Game of Diamonds is one of the most beautiful songs that you've ever recorded. I was really taken aback when I heard it, and I just wondered if there was any particular story behind it. It's a really beautiful song.
Well, it was kind of us going out on a limb there and going into a more, I guess, folk direction. I've always really enjoyed the tradition of popular folk music. It's certainly not autobiographical. It's not about me, per se, but it's a song about weakness and being at the end of the day, you know, and sort of looking back on things.
Do you think that the album also, and you guys, benefited from the leaking of the album? Because I know at the time that you were originally quite pissed off about it being leaked, but...
I wasn't really pissed off about it being leaked. I was pissed about how it leaked. I used something called Mediafire to transfer all my files to approve a rough mix. What I didn't know was that basically all the files I'd ever uploaded were collected into a folder, which I didn't know existed. And then when I went to go give away some music on my blog, which I had made for free for the audience, it ended up linking to basically everything I'd ever uploaded, which included things like family photos, you know?
Oh, I see. Right,
which
okay.
People were, like, picking over and making fun of. And, you know, there was this whole interaction I had with some, you know, people trying to attack me, where they went so far as to, like, make fun of and mock my dead band member and very close friend, Justin. I responded, you know, by calling that person a c***. And somehow, some people determined, you know, wrongly, that I was just referring to, all of our fans as c***.
Right.
It's just really immature, and it's just drama. And it's like, you know, if somebody ever mocks one of my dead friends or disrespects their families or anything like that, I mean, I will physically kick their ass. I mean, whether I'm weigh 100 pounds or, you know, whatever, it's like, you know, I was defending my friend. I wasn't trying to further any drama.
So for people that aren't familiar with the band's history, could you explain Justin's involvement in the band and everything that happened?
Justin was our bass player and one of the members of our band. He and my friend Colin, who used to be in the band as well, we're still friends. You know, they got involved with drugs and hard stuff that I'm not ever, you know, I'm not involved with. I don't endorse, and it was really sad to watch. Eventually, Justin, you know, I had to ask him to leave because of that issue. And right as he Get Clean, he was run over riding a skateboard.
Oh my gosh.
And I was just about to, you know, have him rejoin everything. So it was quite a difficult time in our lives. We made elegies for him with guitar feedback and sort of grieved in our own ways.
Going back to what you were saying before about basically how horrible people on the internet can be, I wondered if you, how, just internet or none really, how you feel about criticism. I know that you've been the subject of some pretty unjust, horrible things have been said about your appearance and that kind of thing. Are you able to successfully sort of put that to one side and say, there's no point in taking any notice of that, or does it affect?
Oh, at this point, yeah, it's very easy just to ignore
really?
It. Like, nonsense, you know? And it just makes the people who make those kind of comments look really hideous, so usually people who make fun of other people are acting out of insecurity anyway. So I'm able, you know, all that's kind of behind me now.
You recorded Rainwater Cassette Exchange in the same studios as Microcastle, your last album. But this one, yeah, it was recorded in a week.
Microcastle was recorded in a week. Yeah. Rainwater was recorded in like maybe 2 days.
So is it something about the studio that you're just able to record these things so quickly?
We always tend to record really fast. Our manner of working, it's sort of consistent. And yeah, we tend to just, I don't know, it's hard for us to take too much time on something. We sort of just go with it.
When you record, do you tend to just, you know, stay up the whole time you're doing it until you get it right?
Usually we kind of get things on the first take.
Wow.
I generally like to get, you know, we do the whole, we get it together as a group and literally play the song all the way through once. And then we, you know, overdub instruments on top of that. But, I mean, yeah, it's definitely almost always first takes.
That was Bradford Cox, and Deer Hunter's Rainwater Cassette Exchange is out on June 15th.
William Dean Esquire. Right, he joins us for Singles Club today. Or, I put this to you, should that not be Will I Am Dean?
It's good. It's been done. It's been done before, but it's good.
Have you thought about it, though? Have you thought about it? Because, I mean, there is a bit of room. I mean, he's very popular, but there's a bit of room for, I think, a Northwestern take.
I like to barge to the front of queues at gigs and give it the big Will I Am.
Very good.
It's been used.
Thank you, Will. What a fabulous way to introduce yourself, and we shall roll straight onwards into Singles Club now. We're going to start with Discovery and Orange Shirt. That was Orange Shirt by Discovery. If you were to discover an orange shirt in your wardrobe, you might be inclined to think that summer had arrived. If you were to find Discovery in your record collection, you'd be looking at the new electronic collaboration between Vampire Weekend and Rah Rah Riot. So I did that, Rosie. I split them in two and
yes.
Kind of paired. Yeah. Yeah. So you like this then?
I do like this. I have to say, it's not the most normal thing to say you don't like the whole album of something you've just brought into Singles Club, but the hook of, you know, massively produced R&B meets collegiate vocalist kind of wears a bit thin for me, 12 tracks long. But this is the opening track of the new self-titled Discovery album. And it's definitely the best, as far as I'm concerned. It's just, you know, I mean, it kind of sets out what they're there to do. He's written the melody in a sort of R and Kelly style vocal. The production switches between, you know, I guess, you know, you might wearily call it swathes of synth. But you know, sometimes it's a bit kind of Timbaland, and then other times it reminds me of Ryan Leslie, who produced like Cassie's Me and You, that kind of very disjointed sound to it. And it's kind, you know, I mean, it just does what it does really well, and it's quite addictive to listening to, and it's good. Yeah, it's good.
I would agree with you 100%. 100%.
I kind of, having
spent a lot of time listening to Passion Pit recently and stuff, I kind of wonder whether my tolerance for synth-flavoured kind of indie pop might be coming to an end. But I think that just that little R&B wrinkle on it Does it for me. Although, do you know who else it reminds me of? Mike Posner and his drug dealer girl. The much derided Mike Posner and his drug dealer girl. I'll put that out there. Will, what do you think?
You've stolen my point a bit there, McInnes. I was going to say, with the Passion Pit thing, I like it, and it's a nice track, and I particularly like that the R&B, there's a little sort of rave line that's from Flashing Lights by Kanye that towards the end of the song, which is great. But Passion Pit, what they did, they had two amazing tracks where they'd really gone for it, and then they kind of pulled it back in, and it was a bit more indie and sounded more sort of Postal Service. It is, you know, indie kids. Oh, we've got a synth to play with. And like you said, I've listened to the record, and after a while, it does become, you know, that rather than they should have just gone for it and made an R&B record.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I don't think they really... This is the one where it just is so big and it's so tightly, every corner of it's been thought about. And maybe they just don't do that on the rest of it. Maybe that's what it is. I'm not sure. But I'm quite interested to hear what people think of this next step in blatant R&Bing by the white indie fraternity.
Well, yeah, it's like, and it's no less brash than their than Vampire Weekend's appropriation of Afropop, was it? Okay, that is Orange Shirt by Discovery, and the album LP. See what they've done there. Another witty little take is out on July the 7th on XL, and you can check out more on their MySpace right now. Second track on Singles Club is Josephine by the Magnolia Electric Company.
I turned your life so upside down. I don't know how you stayed or why. Looking always over my shoulder, exactly what I wanted to find was already mine. Josephine.
That was the Magnolia Electric Company with Josephine. Josephine is the name of my grandmother, and this song is about her. Generally, it makes her sound sexier than I remember her, though. Magnolia Electric Company, on the other hand, is an alternative project for US singer-songwriter Jason Molina, and this is either the fifth album released under this moniker or the third, depending on whether you count box set anthologies and live albums. It is the first album, however, to feature my gran. Will,
I thought that was a quote from Jason Molina then for a second. I thought, I've not done my research.
This is my gran.
In sort of opposite to what we were saying about Discovery, I chose this track because the Magnolia Electric Company record, I think, is really great and is a really, really solid alt country, not hit, because it's not going to be a hit, but, you know, it's a really strong record. And this is the lead-off single and also the name of the album and the one that I think you can download from their website. And I think it's one of the weaker moments. I mean, we all sort of sat there slowly nodding our heads listening to that. But, I mean, it's nice. It's a song of contentment, and you know, Jason Molina sounds quite content. There's obviously that kind of Palace Brothers. I think he started his career on Palace Music. Sound still there, which I think he moved away from and has come back to. And yeah, he's a guy that I've kind of kept an eye on for a while. And
what sound did he move to from?
Well, I think when they were still Songs of Hire and they did Magnolia Electric Company,
which was their previous name.
Yeah, this was about 2003. There was a Songs of Hire record called Magnolia Electric Company, and then some point after that, and it's never really been made clear, Songs of Hire became Magnolia Electric Company, which is obviously a nightmare if you are HMV, I imagine. Because obviously, you know, Magnolia Electric Company are selling thousands of records at HMV.
They open at 2 o'clock in the morning, get all the staff in to resort.
And I think the one after that was a bit more sort of Neil Young-y, and then had moved away from that sort of Will Oldham sound. And he sounds like he's gone back there.
I mean, it just leaves me completely and utterly cold, I feel like. But I feel like a void. I have actually no emotional response to this whatsoever, Rosie.
Didn't you once say that you don't understand what people mean when they say they have an emotional response to music?
Well, I'm glad, because I'm just dead. My nervous system is dead.
When I first heard this, I kind of thought, oh, it's just straight down the line, Americana rock, it's, you know, it is what it is. And then I found myself going back and listening to it again and again and again, and the melody just absolutely grew on me. It's funny what you said about it being a sense of contentment, because I think it's somewhere between almost a restless feeling and then quite a winsome feeling. I don't really know what he's getting at when he's singing about this woman, but it's so nice when the way he sings, oh, what a fool I've been, and you really get a genuine sense of what he feels at that moment. I just think it's a quite splendid, understated little song.
I presumed it was kind of him saying, oh, I've been a bit of a fool, I've messed around, and now I've realised I'm quite happy with you, Paul's gran.
Yeah.
But many people have said that, so my gran tells me. Is it kind of typical? What I found about this is like one of the things that I find difficult to engage with in these sorts of songs is the enigmatic turns of phrase. Trying to put things in a slightly aphoristic way so you kind of contemplate them and work them out. Why can't people say things just explicitly?
What you mean? So you don't know what?
Well, when he says, "I kind of you find I something like you know I finally found what I never knew I was looking for," and these sorts of things. I don't know. Is that? I suppose it's poetry, isn't it?
It's not just that. It's that you can pick up on the rest of it from what's created with the rest of the song. You know, it's not... Whatever he's singing will be completely transformed if he did it all in minor chords or all in a certain way. You'd think, oh, my God, this is so sad, or oh, my God, this is so happy. And he's very deliberately tried to create a feeling of emotional confusion, I think, an emotional sort of, you know, feeling befuddled, but knowing that you love someone.
That was really helpful. Thank you, Moses Wash. Okay, Josephine, here's the title track from the latest album by Magnolia Electric Company, and it's available to download, as Will said, from their website right now. The final track on Singles Club this week is DOA by Jay-Z.
Rapper to rewrite history without a pen. No ID on the track, let the story begin. Begin. This is anti-auto-tune, death of the ringtone. This ain't for iTunes, this ain't for sing-alongs. This is Sinatra at the opera, bring a blonde. Preferably with a fat ass who can sing a song. Wrong, this ain't politically correct. This might offend my political connects. My raps don't have melodies. It should make jackets want go and commit felonies. Get your chain took in. I may do it myself.
That was Jay-Z with DOA. That's my little attempt at auto-tune there, because DOA stands for Death of Auto-Tune. That computerized effect that makes you sound like a robot from 1979 and is used by everyone from Kanye West to indeed Will.i.am on the other side of the desk here. Oddly, therefore, this song, a leak from Jay-Z's upcoming Blueprint 3 album, is produced by Kanye West alongside No ID. I'm going to kind of complete the trend here, and that I'm not going to put this out here without qualification, in that I don't entirely love this tune. There are things I like about it, defo. I like the guitar sample, which reminds me very much of there was a trend about 15 years ago for these kind of old bluesy early rock and roll guitarists sampled by people like Diamond D and Showbiz, and they made great cracking tracks out of them, and this aspires towards that, I think. I also like the aspiration. I like the fact of saying, okay, well, this is a gimmick, this is fad hip-hop that a lot of people rail against, and I'm going to put a stop to it and I'm going to do something real. My raps don't have melodies, I think, is a nice line. However, I think he's stretching it when he says that this is Sinatra at the opera. I think, although perhaps in the sense that it does sound like it's music made by an old man. Some people have come back to this, some auto-tune using rappers have responded to this track and said that it does sound like somebody who just can't get with the times. And I think there is an element of that. This sounds very much like, in total, sounds very much like a tune from his American Gangster soundtrack, which was fated at the time because it had a full live instrumentation and stuff, but ultimately wasn't that banging. And I think there's something about this that doesn't quite go far enough. The raps aren't that interesting. And it just, the track meanders to an end, really. And whoever suggested that he should kind of put that soprano sax, so I'm told, into the middle of the track, I think that was wrong advice. It just makes it sound, almost makes it sound like Frank Sinatra's 80th birthday party. Rosie?
I always really like Jay-Z's lyrics. They always kind, you know, I mean, obviously sometimes they're a little bit sexist, he is a rapper, but for the most part they always kind of make me giggle, and they're quite interesting, and he mixes his metaphors and his talk of where he came from and pop culture and all that quite well. I like the fact that he's setting this thing out about death of autotune, so he's decided to make a very organic sounding track. But I agree with you about the way it meanders. It feels like it should be bigger than it is. And when it initially starts off and he sort of rolls that intro and you're waiting to be like, kind of, you know, 99 Problems, where you're like, wow. it doesn't really do that. And it, I think it could have done if it had been produced slightly differently. And I also, I wasn't, you know, I mean, who, Kanye West produced it and he's just made a whole album auto-tune. So I don't, you know, what's he saying? Now I've done the auto-tune album, you know, now it's over. Except for Mr. Hudson, who's made a really terrible... Anyway.
Yeah. So I Yusuf Malik has made a really terrible auto-tune spoken word album as well.
So, yeah, so, for, you know... and also, I'm sure that Jockin Jay-Z, which appears on this album, has voice modification on it. Maybe not auto-tune, but I'm sure that there's a bit in it which is so... What is what's that about?
It's slight inconsistency on the part of Mr. Z. Will.
Maybe Kanye doesn't get it. Maybe he thinks it's about a gay fish. I quite liked it, actually. The link that I listened to it on was from Entertainment Weekly, and they were saying, this isn't a pop hit, it's a manifesto. And obviously, I don't know, I don't think T-Pain, who actually becomes a verb in this song, when he, T-Paining, I don't know if they will listen to it, but I think Auto-Tune's time has well and truly gone. And if he's timed it right so that now everyone is going to give up on it, will people look back and go, oh, when Jay-Z said stop, everybody said stop, but actually everyone's kind of done what they can with it. To follow what Rose said, there are some really great lines in there. There's something about, instead of getting Auto-Tune, bring someone with a fat ass who can sing. And he's adamant that we're in a recession, but if you use auto-tune, it will lead to the Great Depression.
Great Depression, yes.
So there's some...
It's quite... The recession keeps popping up, actually. I mean, this is...
It's like working at The Guardian.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, I don't know. I wonder whether he's got all his currency in pounds or something, and he's just seeing it depreciate by the day.
A mattress that's been chucked away
in Israel.
I like that he's also opened... So the first track that's leaked from this, from Blueprint 3 and his Glastonbury show last year, both started with him singing hideously out of tune.
So this Jockin Jay-Z, I thought that was on the Blueprint 3. Is that not on the Blueprint 3?
Yeah.
So this is actually the second, but it might be the lead single or something like that. Maybe
I don't know.
That'll be what will happen. Anyway, okay. That was Jay-Z and the death of Auto-Tune, a.k.a. DOA. And the Blueprint 3 is due to come out in September. Rosie, there were comments on last week's singles.
There was. Cookie Dream wasn't really on board with the singles. Can't say I was enamoured with any of the singles club offerings. LaRue almost creeps into an area where I'd like to check her stuff out, but not quite there yet from what I've heard thus far. So he might go and listen to her music at some point, but she's going to have to hear more of it before he decides. I don't understand.
Slight tautology there, isn't it? You've spotted the logical hole there. Bass Monkey had some more in-depth criticism. LaRue, the verse sounds like the soundtrack to an old Amiga computer game, and the chorus, are you really saying that if the chorus had been written by a Belgian pop band and you'd first heard it in a nightclub while on holiday in Portugal in 1999, you would have thought that that's a perfect pop song, huh?
What's wrong with sounding like an Amiga game?
Well,
I
suppose that's the next... That's probably Discovery's album track number 6, isn't it? The fact that Alex Needham stumbled over the words perfect pop song shows that his subconscious was trying to throttle him. To prevent the words coming out. It's not an offensive record, but if you're going to build it up like that... Thank you, Bass Monkey. That's a great little comment. Both Sam Tar, 88, and Sam Griffin on Facebook, who may actually be the same person, I don't know, pointed out that when I said that the rapping on the Enter Shikari track sounded like Mike Skinner, it's because it was. We want your reviews of this week's tracks from Discovery, Magnolia Electric Company and Jay-Z on our blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Tell us what you think of those tracks. Thanks to Will I Am. Now, I guess you're going to be heading back to 3008 while we continue to be 2000 and late.
I've not actually been here. I've been a hologram beamed in from a park in Chicago.
That's pretty exciting, Will I Am. Well, it's been very nice to meet you, and thank you so much for coming in. We'll see you soon, I hope.
Thank you.
But that is it for this week's Singles Club. You can catch the column on the site each Wednesday, however, do not forget. Next on Music Weekly, it's Wild Birds and Peace Drums. That's There Is No Light by Wild Birds and Peace Drums, our second guest this week. Another band we've reviewed before on the pod and seen you lot go wild for, Wild Birds, are the husband and wife duo who are percussion crazy and as pagan as they want to be. Is that fair, Rosie Swash?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that because they Andreas and Mariam, the couple, claim to be inspired by everything from, well, mainly jazz, actually. They come from a freeform background, but I think that their music in itself is very, very hard to pin down, which is one of the things that makes it so good. And they were over here in London last week as a part of their European tour. And so I asked them to describe their sound. Why did you come up with the name The Snake for this album?
Should we be honest, Mariam? I think it's time.
I think there's a lot of... Why? It's a lot of...
It's time now.
What, have you got different answers?
We're talking about the industry and, you know, how it's controlled and how people see as a product. It's a certain man. It's called after the snake, yeah.
We understood that the record was going to be much darker than our debut and, like, we felt that... And we also had this frustration at the same time. And then there was this man who was like this bastard.
Do you think he knows who he is? Or if he was to listen to this, would he know?
I think so. Maybe.
I hope so, but I don't think so.
No, he doesn't.
What did he do?
Some people use their powers to, in just the wrong ways, trying to, you know, gain more power and... You know, makes you feel just small and useless.
See, I was so, like, snake, you know, the album, you know, the way it moves is like a snake. It doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, of course, he has a lot of... It made sense in more ways than just an evil man, of course.
And it really is just you two and drums. There's no other...
Yeah, I mean, we have some other instruments on the record and live as well, but, I mean, that's our main focus. Normally, like, instruments to hit on.
That's what's so distinctive about your sound. It's like you two are competing to who can, like, I'm going to shout and you're going to... Are you both very strong personalities? Mm. Or is it the opposite? It's like that comes out while you're on stage, but you're usually quite laid back.
I think we both have a lot of temperament and... Because we have this kind of setting, it also allows us to let that all out without competing, really. If I get a lot of energy on stage, Andreas feels that and also gets a lot of energy.
It's very easy to get things going because it's only the two of us.
Which also, being a married couple, I'd imagine it makes it easier, or... I don't know if you've got anything to compare it to. Were you in other bands before, or...?
No, not like this. I mean, this is kind of a special band for us because we started it just by needing it, actually. It sounds a bit weird, but we didn't have any big plans for it, and then it just naturally growed. But so we don't have a lot to compare with. I mean, it's easy for us in the way that we're together. I mean, the travel thing and touring thing would be hard, I think, if we were not in the same band. But also we're really careful to separate our private life with our kind of music life.
Oh, really?
So there's because, like a... I mean, we've never tried to... I just hate bands that, you know, try to show off their privacy to drag people into it. Because, yeah. I mean, we have an intimacy. And some people say that they can see that on stage. I mean, of course, we're married. We show our rings.
And were you did you meet... First as, you know, just meeting and then the band happened, or was it...
I think we were together like 2 years before we played together as a duo. So during those 2 years we did a lot of talking about music, you know, and listened to a lot of music. And I think we took those, you know, the first step as a band just by talking instead of playing. So when we started to play together, it was already there, the things that we wanted to do.
So it was sort of organic that you came to this. I read that you guys won it was called, where I saw it, Jazz in Sweden Prize. Is that because you guys come from a jazz background, which I think I can hear in your drumming? Is that where the freeform comes from?
I guess yeah. I mean, we have both been very interested in experimental music in all forms and a lot of like free jazz and free improvisation and stuff like that, and so I guess that's why we got the award.
I mean, 10 years ago it was like a really big thing for you to get that prize, because for me anyway, I was a lot into jazz and free stuff, and I still am. But I mean, we started this band as a kind of reaction against everything, and then all of a sudden you get what you wanted when you don't need it anymore. You know what I mean?
Okay. So what were you reacting against in particular when you were, you're like, this is what we don't want to do in this band?
Yeah, but I mean, everything we do, everything we did when we started playing was everything that we couldn't do in other bands, kind of, because our roles were totally changed. I mean, from being just a singer, I was suddenly half of a band. We just felt like we were pure musicians, finally. When we played a pop festival, for example, people are like, yeah, and this pop band is playing. You know, if people would see us as a pop band, we would feel like, oh, is that all we do? I get depressed of being called a jazz band or a rock band. Yeah. Just because that gives you a lot of images that doesn't feel like that's the music. Yeah. Because music is about something else. And
I read somewhere that to be able to play music that's so good that it's beyond music, it becomes something else. You don't think about it as music. You don't place it in your music part of your brain. You just like interact with it and you like it, hopefully. And that's like the, you know, the main goal, I think, right now for me, you know, to actually play, to do something with an instrument that it's not music, but I love it, and hopefully other people do as well.
That's Wild Birds and Peace Drums, and their second album, The Snake, is out on Leaf Records.
We've got a little bit of FWNN for you now. It's Matt Hall, one of the bosses at Guardian Podcasts, and a man who listens to more audio than a Stasi surveillance operative. Here he is talking about one of his musical heroes, Harry Nilsson.
There's a school of thought that reckons Harry Nilsson is a classic example of wasted talent. When the Beatles were asked who their favourite American artist was, John Lennon said Nilsson. The next question sought the name of their favourite American group. This time Macca answered Nilsson. Despite this blessing and the occasional worldwide hit, ironically, for a man who started out in LA's version of the Brill Building, usually with other people's songs, Nilsson never really had the success his talent deserved. Partly this was self-inflicted. The one time he did manage to get into the studio with John Lennon was a disaster. He was so wrecked by the trail of drunken destruction the pair of them had carved through LA during the ex-Beatles' legendary Lost Weekend that he tore his vocal cords. Terrified that Lennon would knock the sessions on the head, he kept the news quiet, and the subsequent Pussycats album served only as a dry run for Lennon's more celebrated rock and roll.
Everybody's talking at me, I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes.
He was also really, really unlucky. His comeback was derailed by the death of Elvis Presley. His Mayfair flat was the site of not one, but two rock stars shuffling off their mortal coils, Mama Cass and Keith Moon. And his retirement plans were thrown into chaos when his financial advisor embezzled all his savings, leaving Nilsson $300 and a mountain of debts, and many people think contributing to his subsequent death from a heart attack at the age of 52.
Can't live if living is without you. I can't live, I can't give anymore. I can't live if living is without you. I can't give, I can't give anymore.
But it's better to think of Nilsson as one of pop music's great wayward talents. Early in his career, he wrote sugar-coated songs about outrageous sexual practices, which were so catchy they got sung by the Monkees on kids' TV. He recorded a whole album featuring kettle drum solos after he heard a virtuoso while on holiday in the Caribbean. And years before senior citizens' choirs became all the rage, no, really, he had the OAPs of the Stepney and Pinner Choir Club No. 6 singing the refrain, "I'd rather be dead than wet the bed." His love of a gorgeous song meant that, whether it came from Randy Newman, 1920s Tin Pan Alley, or most famously, Greenwich Village folky Fred Neil, he treated them with respect, often putting down the definitive version. Nielsen Sings Newman was pretty much the first time anyone had given his fellow acerbic LA songwriter the time of day. It still stands up as one of the best readings of Newman's early work. A Little Touch of Schmielsen in the Night introduced a new audience to the great pop songs of Irving Berlin, Gus Kahn, et al. And, in Everybody's Talking, Nielsen recorded the classic version of a classic song. If he'd done this and nothing else, his reputation would be assured. Rest in peace, Harry.
That was Matt Hall on Harry Nielsen and FWNN. That does stand for the feature with no name, by the way. I've just decided to acronymize it. We'll be back next week. On last week's interviews, Van Ramp said, Sonic Youth were and always will be utterly talentless. Pretentious, talentless twats. Without merit on any level. Chronic.
I don't know what the chronic means.
I thought that's what you smoke when you hang around with Dr. Dre's.
To which D. Holiday responded, Confusion is Sex is the rawest, baddest rock album ever. Stereo Sanctity from Sister has the darkest, baddest groove out ever. That will be all for now.
So who do you think wins out of Van Ramp and D. Holiday? My money is on D. Holiday. Formal said of our other guest, that Barbara Mal track at the end was one of the best things I've heard on the podcast in a while. I thought at one point during the interview he was going to have a go at Bob Geldof. But he didn't really. You can't have everything, I suppose. Still very enjoyable. Cheers.
Meanwhile, Nora Hollywood agreed. Wonderful stuff. Thank you. Isn't it amazing all the ace music coming from Senegal? Youssou N'Dour, Baba Mal and Orchestra Baobab are all giants of African music, and there are many more fine musicians besides. I love positive comments on the blog.
Yeah, defo. It's a rare experience that we cherish. Nora Hollywood, I wonder. Nora Ephron, director of When Harry Met Sally?
Yes.
Hollywood-based, put two and two together. There you go. First celeb commenter. Nice one. We'd like to say hello to new Facebook friends Zensai, Anna Antic and Kevin Marston. But I'd also like to point out we're just 20. I checked this morning. We're just 20 fans away from cracking through the 1,000 barrier on our fan page, Music Weekly fan page. Search Music Weekly Facebook. You'll find it and you could be a fan. And if you
We'll definitely say yes if you want to be our friend.
Yeah, defo. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, and if we tip over 1,000 next week, we'll maybe send you all a cake. Post comments on this week's blog. Tell us what you made of Deer Hunter and Wild Birds and Peace Drums, amongst others. The address is guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. But I'm afraid that is it for this week. We've got 2 weeks and then it's Glasgow, isn't it? Got Glasgow special, bumper Glasgow package. Rosie's been so involved in building up all the coverage and reporting about potential monsoons that maybe... You're getting a little bit jaded before the event.
I'm gonna enjoy this one. I'm definitely gonna try and enjoy it.
Well, whether you enjoy it in real life or not, you will certainly sound like you enjoy it on the podcast. So exactly. Look forward to that. We'll be back next week with a normal show, though. So until then, goodbye.